need somebody else to say go. So, oh, okay, yeah, I can do that. But something he said was that we view everything from the behind the scenes of our lives. And so it's like, if you're judging yourself from the behind the scenes of your life, but you're looking at the final, you know, projection of somebody else, you're not standing in the right position to accurately compare things, because you just don't see their behind the scenes.
For sure. Like not seeing eye to eye, not looking at it from an even perspective. It's like,
yes,
you could be on a camera like in 80 millimeters and somebody else is on like 2000, like super micro. Like, yeah, that's a microscope, but I'm looking through a telescope. We're looking through two different lenses, bro.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, dude. And like, you know, the behind the scenes, you're like in the trenches, like peeking over the edge. And like, oh, wow, they look like they really have it figured out. And you like, go back into your trench. It's like, yeah. No, you just see the only part that they've shared. And it seems obvious, but it's like, I'm trying to think who does a good job of like really showing the behind the scenes, right? Because that is also going to be the most sustainable format for creation. Like when you don't have to non-performative. And oh, I've got so many ideas rattling around my head the last few days. I've been in a learning season. A pretty big learning season. Going back to Neville Goddard, reading some of the old books, like, because you can tell there's a difference in approach between like new age self-help books and the old classics. Like new age books, the first three chapters are just like them kind of amping up the idea that they're going to discuss later. Like really, it's three chapters of like persuasion. Like this is why you should listen to this thing. Whereas like you read an old Neville Goddard book, 90 pages, gets right into it. It's like, listen up. This is what the deal is. No mincing of words. Just like, this is what is going on. If you want to manifest, this is how you do it.
Like some old school Hormozy.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. Pretty much. It's like when something that stuck with me the last few days that I've I go through phases where like it's so, I find it challenging to make content because things are clarifying themselves. Like I'll have periods where I'll film a bunch of videos and just go bang, 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 bang. Good. Send. And then phases like this where I've filmed a bunch of things lately, but they're all like, they're not. I get close to the meat. I get close to the center that I want to get to, but then I review, I go, that's not, there's something more. So just wait and let your brain fill in some context. Things have to marinate. And one of these statements that he said, don't think of it, think from it. Mm. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
You're not holding it in your hand. You are the thing in the hand experiencing the holder.
And yes. Yes.
Yeah. Reframing of a perspective. Wow. Holy shit.
Reframing. Cause it's like, and that's, and then I was like, well, that's embodiment as right as well. Right. Like he discusses this. It's through sustained application of imagination through focused attention until you become what you hold in your mind and you think from that place as opposed to of that place.
Like a candle with meditation, staring at the candle, everything else fades away. And then eventually there's a part of you that becomes resonant with that candle's flicker. You feel like there is this union with the flame and it's dancing. It's like, I am that, which I am watching.
I am that.
That.
I am. That's what it, it came back to was I am, and that's how he explained it, is that, you know, you're staring at the candle, everything else push to the side, and there is no separation between what you think yourself to be and the ideal that you are holding on to. And so I've been playing around with that, like practicing, noticing not what I'm thinking of, but where I am thinking from. You can think of abundance all you want, but if you're thinking of it from a place of scarcity, it won't do us any good.
Thinking about the idea, like the idea of abundance, as opposed to feeling the texture of it and then taking it another layer back, yeah, to where you can drink water, but then the water becomes part of you. Mm. You drink it in.
You drink it in. You drink it in. And like that, think from it, not of it. And so this, that, you know, the practice, right? The practice is cultivating that ability to enter the place and think from that place. That's most of the work, right? Like that is most of the work, because when you're in the place, the zone of genius, right? Let's call it that. What you are capable of from your zone of genius is so much more potent than grunt work, like forcing yourself through something. But when you think from it, you think from a place of power rather than pushing through force.
Trying to bore through a mountain aimlessly, not knowing where the gold is, as opposed to seeing with modern technology, LIDAR, being able to see where, that's where the gold or the oil reserve is, and shooting a direct freaking pipeline straight to it, to the source, tap uh-huh. right into it. And then it, you siphon it and then drink it in, you become the freaking gold and the oil. That's probably not what actually happens, but you get the point.
Yeah, that's it, right? Because like that, when you are in that zone of genius, or that place of clear sight, you do see the veins in the earth, right? Like it's, and I think about, you know, various practices that bring us into that place. Journaling is one, right? Like there's this sense that you are, the pen doesn't stop moving, and it's brushing away the topsoil, and you go, oh wow, there's like a thick line of jade here. It's beautiful, beautiful, like filament of elements that you have to uncover, right? There's a great uncovering. And it's all underneath the surface. It's all within you. There's always power there to be used. There's always power there to be used. And then another thing I was thinking of, like with that power, the only way to use it is to also reduce it. And I think about this in two fronts. With possibility, particularly for a group of people like this, where there's a hint of neurodivergency, let's just say. we are so sensitive to possibility that the only way to actually move with that possibility is to reduce it, right? And that is through decisions. And the decision is only truly a decision when you remove the other options, or else you carry the weight of all of those options. And that weight can be heavy, right? And so in order to use it, we have to reduce it. To receive it, we have to set it free. And to use the power of our attention, we also have to reduce that, right? Like the potency of your attention is relative to the tightness of that beam, right? Because attention and its power can be diluted over a widespread area. in which case it's not very potent. All right. Like if you had a big, say, gardening, like hosing the grass, you can sit there with the spray and it's like misting out to the sides and it's kind of getting things wet, but it's not soaking anything. Whereas you tighten that beam and you can watch that same amount of water drill into the earth. So how do we tighten that beam of focus and use the elements around us, the environment, to facilitate that? And so I played with this a little bit where I usually have this big desk and I've always thought, well, that's good. I love a big desk and I do. But we are at one with our environment. And so if you want a tighter beam of focus, how can I create a smaller space? And so there's a other spot in the house where I just kind of like dragged a desk into the corner, turn off the lights, put on a candle, and my world just like shrinks down to this.
Love that.
It's helpful. It was really helpful because it takes away the, I mean, it seems kind of obvious, reduce the stimuli to tune into inner focus, inner stimuli, as opposed to outer. And boy, oh boy, if that isn't like the hardest thing to do when you have a phone technology, it's pretty easy to look back on my most productive weeks and see a direct correlation with a low amount of screen time.
Talk about a jarring statistic.
Okay.
Hours.
Yeah, man. Hours. And it's, like how much of that was intentional? How much of that was, I say productive, not in the capitalistic sense, but like generative, right? Everything can be helpful or a hindrance. And if we don't know why we picked it up, it's picked us up.
Right, we're being used more than we are using it, rather than using it as a tool for something greater, to focus that attention, that garden hose, and direct it deep into the consciousness of, well, for this bubble right here per se, this container. This is a direct extension where all of us right here can have this beautiful experience. This is like cutting right into it and use this technology not to diffract, but to share this potency.
Yes, potency, right? And that potency is relative to how deeply that beam of focus and attention can penetrate, right? Because when we're not focused, it's just like we're just kind of bouncing off whatever what it is that what is in front of us.
100%.
Like just Teflon.
No orientation to anything, and like a goal, or like a little kid with not that great of balance, and just haphazardly stumbling around the kitchen, or tripping over shit.
Tripping over shit. Tripping over shit. Yeah. And so how do we trip less, right? Well, first, I think we be okay with tripping. Like, I was saying to my, I had a couple students like stumble and fall yesterday in class. And I was like, yes. Like you're going beyond what you were comfortable in before. That is great. Get up, try again. Didn't fall. Right? You have to fall in order to calibrate. Right? That is, of course, made better, more functional when a space is created where you don't feel embarrassed to fall. Right? Like, just like anything, it's all practice. All of it. All practice. And I think that all of us can benefit from practicing in public, right? Like practice your craft in public and look at it all as practice, right? And iterate over time and understanding that everything compounds. So make many small moves.
Teaching my first yoga class Petrifying. Teaching that 100th class, nervousness is there, but different orientation, different thing guiding you. There's a much deeper focus, maybe not diffracted. It's all channeled into a very specific sequence, intention, direction, speaking to each student without, feeling like you're all over the place and just focusing on yourself, more on them, less on how am I doing? Well, how are they doing? Is this being received for them? I'm just going to show up and be the best teacher I can be without knowing it needs to be perfect. I will trip. Maybe I'll literally trip over my mat. That's probably okay.
So when you're in that zone, you are thinking from, not of.
That's it.
You're thinking from the teacher, not of the teacher.
The zone of genius, where you're not doing it, it is doing you, and it is acting through you as that vessel. Same thing as journaling, writing. It's just this beautiful confluence or merging of that which is in you or of you or around the universe and the gifts.
So let's think about how ways to enter the place, right? Knowing that what you're entering is within, right? And the more you're looking out there, the more you're looking at rather than from. And so, I think about all the ways that we can move into embodiment, everything from sustained imagination that clarifies over time. I really believe that whether it was a side effect or something deliberate, we were conditioned to cease imagining. And imagination is the key of redemption, right? Like it is the we hold these keys to change. But we must be able to imagine that change first, right? Transformation, let's say, because change is inevitable. Transformation is intentional. And the man who says he can and the man who says he can't are both correct. You have to be willing to imagine what could be. And this is what Neville Goddard really, really encourages and emphasizes is that through the sustained imagination, sustained until your body feels it too. That is the secret. There's a whole book written about it called The Secret.
It ain't a
So you got
secret
to feel
anymore.
it. Feeling is the secret. And so I think about even just reflecting on classes that I felt good teaching versus the classes where I walked away in my head. The classes where I felt best are when I clarified an intention to thoroughly enjoy. And I can thoroughly enjoy it and still be anxious and nervous, right? How many classes would I have taught so far? Not 100, like probably around like the 50 mark now. So definitely, I still get that. I still get anxious for sure. Like everyone's checked in, 1 minute until class starts. Okay, close the door and introduce the class, right? Like it's that wave right there of right, just before the first words have left your mouth. But when I've decided to enjoy it, really enjoy it, go, I'm gonna thoroughly enjoy this, then there is a sense of joy that is underlying. It is the stage upon which that angst occurs, rather than the angst occurring in and of itself, dominating the experience. Like, can I? All right, the angst is there. That's fine. Can I think from a place of joy, though, rather than from that place of angst?
Absolutely. Yeah, catch yourself those moments in the middle of the class. And all of a sudden, you're not doing it anymore and you're like uncalibrated. Like, oh, wow, I'm doing this. Okay, cool. It's like 20 people in front of me. How do I get back in? Let me back in.
Let me back in. It's like, hang on. Why did I gain awareness now? Before I was just being. Now I'm aware of a being. I'm the being, but I'm looking at him. What the heck?
That's where the work is, I guess, man. It's like, where's the door to get back in?
Yeah, where's the door to get back in? That's the question. Where's the door, right? Where is the door? And what are the keys to that door? Because there's always an inner door, right? And we build these. The door, it's like a door kind of appearing in a granite cliff face. Like at first you're looking around, you're like, it's just rocks and I'm outside. And then like, but maybe there's a door. Can I imagine there's a door? Oh, what's appearing in the cliff face? It's like tss, puff of dust. It's like, there is a door there. There's a door on the side of the cliff. Where does it lead? To the place I want to be. To the person I want to be. And you know, I have these oscillations, like I'm sure we all do, between I'm whole and complete and this is nice. I've done the work. It's okay. And then other moments where I'm like, but I also want to improve. I want to be the best version of me. And we exist within paradoxes and polarity, and so it is neither one nor the other. And sometimes to be the best version of self is to merely accept what is right now and not resist. And then there are other times to generate some movement, generate a different state of consciousness, because that is the from, right? That is the from. Your state of consciousness is where you perceive everything from. And to be able to, and so this is where some of the contrast or the dissonance comes in, right? Is that you might listen to someone like Neville Goddard, right? And he'll say that, you know, 2 hours of flow, of working from a place of embodiment, is more potent and profound than any amount of work you could do if you're just grinding through it. But then you listen to some modern day thought leaders, such as Alex Hormozi. He's like, you don't have what you want because you haven't done what you needed to do. And so there is also that. And there's a balance, I believe. And it depends on what you want, right? Like someone like Alex Hormozi, he is, you know, his, what he says is that he's documenting his path to being a billionaire, because Elon didn't do it, Steve Jobs didn't do it, Gates didn't do it. And so what happens is that they forget the things that led them to where they are, and instead just kind of like, well, this is the reason why I'm successful. We're all making things up all the time. And like somebody asked me, so like, how did you become who you are? It's like, well, I could give you an answer, but it's just going to be whatever descriptors I have in this moment. Oh, well, this and this. Like the thing that we will struggle to do most is explain the things that are our nature. Because nature doesn't need to be explained. It doesn't need to be understood so much as just lived. Go ahead.
You could hand somebody a snapshot of descriptors, or you could say, do as I do, watch as I do, not as I say. And just go that extra layer to observe me, do a longitudinal study if you're a scientist, and observe the verb that is me, not the still shot. The still shot will not capture the depth of which I am. And that might be words, might not be the 5 years I spent getting to, 10 years spent getting to that one place. It's not going to show that work or that grind or you know, the oscillation between the two. There's just so much that goes on between there. So much contrast. Can't paint that picture in a snapshot.
So that makes me think as well of like a means of prompting that doorway. Right. thinking of like, all right, you're actually staring at a granite cliff face. The treasure you seek is within. You are the alchemist, you are the mage, and you perform an incarnation. Right? Words repeated over time summon the spells of words, summon the reality, and reality takes the shape of the mold of your mind. And so to embody, right, we can offer ourselves different prompts. Some prompts that I've been playing with are, what would the wise man do? And then I said that to a buddy yesterday. He's like, well, what do wise men do? I'm like, great question. That's why we ask it.
Brings in more questions.
It's interesting to see like where, you know, what that next question is from anybody. Like, what would the wise man do? It's like, well, what does he think he's doing? It's like, I don't know. But it gives you a different springboard, right? What would the successful person do? Or take it very literally and relate it to a person. What would Neville Goddard do? What would Naval Ravikant do? What would Tim Ferriss do? He's looking at my calendar. How would Tim Ferriss approach this? And you get to embody something else. And I think this is something that we're that this current iteration of humans is missing out on, is that we have developed our own masks in order to navigate experience in a way that is supposedly appropriate and right. And now there's a big emphasis on taking the mask off, which I also believe in, although there is always some kind of mask, and that mask is the state of consciousness that we are in because we wear that. And but historically, we would put things on, we would put masks on, we would adorn ourselves with items that were emboldened with a certain power, invested with a certain belief, right? The you know, put on the antlers of the deer in order to embody the intelligence of the forest. We would put on the claws of the bear in order to embody the strength of the bear. We would put on the mask of the god and dance until we entered a trance and became conduits for that God, so that we were not just doing it and relying upon our own will, but becoming a vessel for something with a power greater than what you think you are in isolation.
Playing a part, get to play the part in a movie, just can't become identified with that part in the movie when it's time to move on to the next character and take that mask off and know that it is a mask and have the context of that and be okay to relinquish that. But benefits, get channel God into that. You can be realized God self through the character you're playing. There's a lot of benefits too, sounds like.
Yes, right?
So
Like this is the your, you know, your consciousness is the stage upon which these characters dance and play and act, right? And we correlate acting with almost like inauthenticity. That's only when we're pretending as opposed to embodying. And so we adorn ourselves. But I think about when you invest a certain energy into something, the energy of belief, you embolden that thing, you turn it into a conduit of something. I'm trying to think of examples I have around this space. Two things that I have immediately just in front of me, a couple of little bracelets. I can't remember what stone this is, but it is related to creativity. This is Shungite EMF protection, right? And so everything is a combined effect of, you know, even from a perspective of neuroscience. One of the all-time best podcasts I've ever listened to was Huberman Lab with Dr. Alia Crumb, who is the, she's a, she studies the effects of mindset upon biology. And they discuss several really incredible studies throughout that episode. One was a study about how mindset affects digestion. And they had a couple of the control group, which they were just having a regular milkshake, and they were told they were having a regular milkshake. And then the test group were given the same milkshake, but they were told this is a heavy duty milkshake. This is going to fuck you up, this milkshake. And the people that were told this is a heavy duty milkshake had it's like a 400% increase in one of the enzymes that breaks that involved in digestion. I think it was ghrelin. Just through perceiving that, they had a massive increase in their ability to digest. So everything is a combined effect of what we do and what we think about what we're doing, what we wear, what we think about what we're wearing, what we feel and what we think about what we're feeling. And so that is where this incredible power of influence comes from, is that we can decide how it is seen. And when we change how we see, we change what we receive. And this is the law of assumption. Whatever we assume, reality will end up bringing that into actuality. And this, I think about this in terms of like relationship dynamics, whether like romantic relationships or otherwise, like relationships in the workplace, for example. And Neville Goddard had spoke about this in the book. The book is called The Power of Awareness, I believe. Really short read, full of gold. And he discusses a designer who works at a big design agency, but she's convinced that her boss hates her. He's always criticizing me. He doesn't like what I do. A story, right? And Neville said in a conversation to her that these are all emanations of your own mind. These are assumptions that you are holding that are being reflected back at you. So why don't you just experiment over the next few weeks and change your assumption of this person completely. And this is like, changing the assumption is an embodied process rather than, pretending to yourself, oh no, he likes me a lot, and feeling that he doesn't, which will just create internal dissonance, because at least before you were aligned in your assumption that that person didn't like you. Practicing the visualization, the imagination that this person really likes me. Wow. And she started to visualize him or imagine him praising the work that she was doing. Wow, you are an incredible designer. She's like, yeah, thank you. That feels good. Keep saying that. He's like, I will. And then reality begins to mirror this assumption that you have, because everything exists already. The assumption is what kind of rearranges these the atoms, the molecules that already exist to match the mold of the mind. We must, rebel against cynicism in every way, because our beliefs are self-fulfilling. So what are your beliefs? And whenever you have a belief that isn't serving an assumption around, who you are, what you're capable of, what you can do, what you can't do. The ones that are not serving, propelling you in the direction that you want to go in, you gotta question those. Go, and why is that true? I don't have what it takes. Why is that true? Hey, actually come up with reasons. Why is that not true? And the brain sometimes isn't used to being interrogated in that way. And so it's like, well, I don't hear anything coming from you. Nothing substantial, nothing to qualify this belief or this lack of belief. And if believing in yourself is too hard, we can at minimum suspend actively disbelieving in ourselves. Like if making that leap from disbelief to belief is too hard, let's just suspend the disbelief for a moment and rest in a place of neutrality. Rest in a place of knowing that these are all assumptions. And you might have evidence that confirms your assumption, because that's what assumptions do. They create a natural confirmation bias. And so in order to change what you see, a change in consciousness must occur. And that can be as simple as going for a walk, right? Like, as you said before, the texture of abundance is real because abundance is texture. Abundance is a quality of the universe, not a quantity. Abundance is a neutral term. It's a neutral fact that everything everywhere exists all the time. And if there is an abundance of pain and suffering, there is also an abundance of joy and love. Abundance in the breath. Not once have I ever gone to take a breath and there's been no air for me. It's always been breath for me. Abundance of space. I can see the sky outside. There's an abundance of gray. There's an abundance of rain on the way. Each blade of grass, all of the dirt, all of the molecules, all of the little critters that go into an ecosystem, there is abundance at all times. And so can we place ourselves in an environment that is abundant? That can be outside. That can be anywhere, right? You look into the grain of wood and you see abundance. I look into this glass of water and I see abundant H2O molecules. And then you pair a change in perception with that environment, and then you begin to embody it. You begin to really feel each step is abundant. The feeling of earth and the vastness of the weight beneath you is abundant, right? Like, these, we don't have to pretend. We have to change our vantage point and allow that vantage point to then confirm itself.
From the seer to being seen. Or like the rock, like we originally talked about, the whatever we're holding, that example, becoming the thing. It is the journey to becoming that thing, and that could be the story to get us to that thing, or the releasing, relinquishing of that story to come back to the realization that we are the thing being seen and held, as well as simultaneously holding the thing. So there's a union of things, not just one or the other, but just one side of the coin experiencing the other as one unified. Half dollar.
Is a nice, yeah. A nice weight.
Yeah, it's got weight to it.
Yeah, it's got weight to it. Speaking of weight to it, and here we go. Divergence activated. A couple weeks ago, I found a premium fidget. I didn't know that these were a thing. All the fidgets I've ever seen were like plasticky, googly-eyed things. But there are like stainless steel fidgets, and not just fidget spinners, but like sliders and these big thick coins, haptic coins. This go, I'm gonna have to go get this fidget and show you, because I never order things online, like ever, because I just, probably some kind of seed from my childhood conditioning around resources, whatever. That's a thought to explore later. But I was like, all right, I'm gonna order these things. And it took like 2 weeks to get here because I live on the tip of a vast continent full of emptiness. And dude, I love these fidgets. They're so like sensory and satisfying. A big heavy weight, click, click. And I didn't know that they made these things. I didn't know there are people out there creating incredible, technically useless things. Like, it all arrived in the mail, and Brooke's like, what is the functional utility of that? And like, can't you see? Click, click, click. It clicks. This one slides, this one spins. That's all.
It's like those ASMR videos, but it's like you could hold it in your hand, dude. And you feel it. You don't just have to, you don't have to listen to it. You can feel it.
And, oh, so good. It was a real hyperfixation. I'm like, Brooke's like, are you still just sitting there playing with this thing? I was like, yeah. I was like, no, I'm not, that, this is not a career pivot. I don't need to get into making fidgets. Other people are doing that. I don't need to do that. But it, the heaviness of something weight of it. It's been a really comforting thing to have on me. And I was going to work yesterday. Brooke was driving me, and we got like halfway there. I went, I forgot my fidget. I'm going to have to go back home and get it. She's like, first of all, no. Second of all, I brought it. Here you go.
Oh, that's awesome.
I was like, wow, you really know me. She's like, yeah, you little freak.
Dude, life completed. What a happy marriage.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, man. Life's good right now. Exceptionally challenging, but really beautiful.
What's a challenge that could be reframed into a thing of gratitude? What's that
there
thing?
There we go. I mean, I'm grateful for all of it. Like the biggest challenge is I'm only even perceiving this challenge because of where I'm thinking from right now. All right. Like I'm starting to, now I'm awake, getting there. And I start to get excited about work, right? Because I love what I do. I also know that I will not do most of it because of my inherent finiteness and the vastness of our perception of possibility. And so there's just a reality to, and this is an assumption, of course, but there is the challenges in learning, reframing what is possible and what is even important. Because when I'm hanging with my daughter, it's like life is fulfilled. It's like, okay, cool. There's nothing else. Did it. This little baby here. She's safe and healthy and so funny. Dude, like in the last couple of weeks, having a newborn, there's been lots of love and connection and like meaning. But now it's getting fun. Like now her personality is coming out. And she is funny. Like, and also the last few days, I had this like sudden recognition of, oh, she loves me back. Like she loves me back. The most amazing thing.
Talk about Ananda, Matt.
Yeah, man. And that was a weird moment of like, because I wasn't searching for that, right? Like I didn't even question that. I didn't expect it, right? Like I wasn't expecting it from her. It was just absorbed in my duty of being a good father. And so I'm not sitting there being like, "Mom, does she even love me?" It's just not a question that comes up. You're just there to protect and provide and nurture and love. But then, like leaving the room and then just coming back in, and she just looks at me and she goes, and it just like starts bouncing, just literally jumping up and down. I'm like, "Oh, dude, you love me, don't you?" And she just makes this little face and she looks like a turtle. She just does this little like turtle face. And it's amazing because newborns get grumpy. They go through these big developmental leaps and like the world changes in really fundamental ways. And there's so many implications to those changes, right? Like last couple of weeks, she recognized, she's like, "Oh, okay. So when they leave the room, they're not here." The implications that follow that of like beginning to conceptualize here and there, presence and absence, conceptualizing not. They're not here. What is not? And so she's like, "Hey, I know what you're doing now. You're putting me down and you're leaving. And I am not okay with that." I'm like, "But dude, you're so tired." Like she's sitting there just like rubbing her face. And her eyes are red. But then she's in a phase now where even when she's really tired, she's still just giggling. Like just laughing and giggling. I'm like, "Dude, you need to go to sleep." And she's like, "No. I'm awake."
So gratitude for that so gratitude for the presence to be able to sit with your daughter and see it all and not miss out on the little moments like that. It's just Incredible, man. The turtle. You don't have to miss the turtle. She's right there.
She's right there, dude. The little turtle. Oh, yeah. And I had another little check-in with the mushroom teachers last weekend, which I never do. I usually like mushrooms for me every 6 months or so as a way to check in and see what's up, right? To because that is a very powerful way to think from, not of.
Totally.
Like you're just enfolded in this loving embrace from the universe. And so you think purely from a place of love. And like this, every time I'm with the mushroom teachers in the little mushroom kingdom, there's this overwhelming knowing that this is what the world needs. And in a fairly literal sense, like there is such a completeness to the love of the teachers that is so much easier to enter that place that you want to be thinking from. There's an afterglow where that door in the cliff is right there. But the key to any of these medicines is what you do following them to integrate that experience into who you are, rather than it being something that is only because of the mushrooms. It's like, no, the mushrooms show you what can be through direct experience and contact, so that you have an imprint to then move towards, rather than this vague, ineffable idea of self-love. It's like, no, you get direct contact with this love. You know what it is. You know it as a felt sense. So it is in you. You can enter that place within you, right? We don't, having a reliance on it is missing the point. The teachers show you what is possible and then send you away to then make that reality closer to the surface.
Would this be like the door, dude? This is the door on the mountain. It's like, hey, there's a door up there. It's going to blow your mind, but it doesn't look like a door. The door is just an idea. The doorknob is not what you think it is. You're not going to put your hand out and turn it. Maybe, but probably not. By the way, see ya. And then you go back into the
Hey.
world and have to figure
So where's that door? Hey, where's the mountain? Where am I? Like the mushrooms are like, oh, he's not getting it yet.
He'll be back.
He'll be back. He'll be back. But it really is an amazing way to really catch up with where you are, right? But then view where you are from a really special place. And so I hadn't checked in with the mushroom teachers since becoming a father. And God, there was so much father energy with the mushrooms this time, because they meet you where you are. They
Totally.
really do. And which is why it's important to not let them become you, right? Not think that the only way to activate or initiate, embody that version of yourself is through them. You go away and you practice and you learn and you grow and you evolve and you stumble and you trip and you fall and you meet them again and they go, ah, this is where you are right now. This is where you are right now. That's what they say. This is where you are right now. And you get to view where you are right now from where you are right now. There's no could have done, should have done, would have done. This is where you are right now. Love it. Embrace it. Embody it. And also close your eyes. Because it's like the brain has just been waiting. It's like, dude, you never, finally, you haven't been closing your eyes enough lately. Here's a show. You have no idea what I'm capable of. You're always like looking outside. And it's like, welcome to the fractals of the universe. Would you like to see the clockwork mechanics of the cosmos? I'm like, yeah. That sounds cool.
That's a nice check-in.
There's a nice check-in. It feels good to speak freely of these things as well, because I want to, my part of my intention is to enable access to these things. Like throughout my life, We don't have the shamans anymore, who are the intermediaries between the spirits of the plants and the person receiving them. And there's so much conditioning around the idea of these substances and compounds, but they are such a direct avenue to original nature. And I'm not here. Actually, no, I am. Fuck that. I am advocating for their conscious consumption.
Let's go. From the heart, dude. From the heart.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I'm working with my own conditioning of being in the cannabis industry in Australia since its inception, and it's just been a process of well, let's dampen down our love for this because we don't want to appear as an evangelist, right? An absolutionist. We don't want to scare off the people. Be scared though, right? Confront that. Observe it. Observe the resistance. Ask yourself, and why is that true? I believe deeply in the plants because the plants believe in me. That is a felt sense. Again, that dynamic changes. Like when I recognize that, oh, now my daughter loves me back. She loves me back. That relationship is with everything. It's one thing to love the earth, but when you feel the earth loves you back, it totally changes the relationship. The universe loves you back. Changes a relationship, right? Because now you get to think from a place of trust and faith, of connection.
I think the universe waited 7 billion years just to say those words and remember again. I'll wait. I'll wait 7 billion more. Unconditional love, man.
Yeah. And so that, nice full circle. We practice our embodiment because every night we forget. Sleep is a phenomena of memory. It's designed to wake, wipe the slate clean. But it doesn't wipe it clean, does it? It wipes it back to some default. And over time, we can change that default. There will always be, like an original essence of the various characters we've embodied throughout our lives. Like making a new pattern doesn't get rid of the old ones, it just gives you new options. And so we practice this embodiment. And because we are designed to forget.
What kind of game would it be if we always remembered everything?
Oh, heavy game. Heavy
Like,
game. It's like, what's wrong? I remember everything. What's got you down? No, the accumulative weight of all experience.
literally everything.
Literally everything. Which is why, another full circle, we make decisions, right? Do you know that feeling of unmade decisions lead to a vast weight because you carry the weight of all possibility. That's why when you make a decision, even if it was a hard decision to make, these decisions always come with a sense of lightness. You've
Yes.
decided, collapsed reality into a single frame as opposed to all of the frames. Heaviness, density. That is just as much possibility as anything, right? And so, yeah, I think a takeaway today is what decisions can I make that will enlighten me? We don't need to chase higher states of consciousness. Those come with great responsibility, but lighter states of consciousness. Man, I love these. I love these. I love these moments.
It's a reason to be alive, man. Just glad we're here all in the same timeline, everybody in this group and planet Earth, good or bad. What a blessing. What a time. Good and bad. I'd like to say embrace it all, but sometimes it's hard.
Yeah,
Gotta take
yeah.
a step back, maybe to Mushroom Land and remember why I'm doing it again.
Remember. Yeah, and remembering is a very sweet nectar because of forgetting. Right? Like it's part and parcel of why we're here. And some things we don't want to remember. And that is, and when we're remembering things that we don't want to remember, that's also like that's another phenomena of memory, is when we don't forget the things that we're supposed to forget. So there's also, there's much practice in forgetting.
The decisions. You get clear on the thing. There's a path, all the dead weight falls away, and then it's a lot lighter. Reality.
It is. And then, I think that will prompt the question of like, well, how do I make the decision? How do I make the right decision? It's like, trust that the decision is right. Not whether it is right or wrong, but like the only way to make it so that it's not the right decision is to not iterate, right? Make the decision, allow experience to inform how you iterate and course correct those decisions. And every decision is right. It's only wrong if you, well, that was it. Didn't work.
Conviction in a decision leads to the remission of our past position.
Oh, dude, that's good. That came from the zone of genius.
Takes two to dance, or many, many to dance.
Oh, yeah, dude. This is a podcast episode.
Let's go.
Thoroughly enjoyed this.
Thanks for doing it.
Thanks for being here. Anybody else that is listening, I'm talking to the podcast listeners now. If you want to partake in these discussions, you can join us in the community. Link will be in the description below. We meet every week, and this is what happens. How excellent. Big, big, big love, everybody. I'm going to go and see my little turtle. And I'll see you all soon.
Peace.
Peace.